Last week, I talked about how and why we move from the religion of our birth. This week, we're going to talk about spiritual exploration. So what does spiritual exploration mean? We go through all kinds of transitions in life when it comes to what we believe or what we don't believe or what we practice or why we practice or how we practice it or what fills us and sustains us at different times. I know so many people who've moved from doubt to certainty or the other direction, from certainty to doubt. Frequently, it feels like people are trying to settle on something at various points in their lives, much like, okay, yes, this is what I believe now, only to have some other transition or event take them to some other place on the path of their progression. I frequently wonder how people get to a place where they are so sure about their beliefs that it seems like maybe they're holding on just a little too tight to what they think is right, and maybe they're a little too certain about what they think is wrong. Although I think that holding on tight can be very limiting, I'm not saying that we should be swimming in an ever-shifting sea of spiritual travel, for that can be disconcerting or confusing. Sometimes I wonder, though, if it would be helpful for the world if we were a little more open to risking exploration or willing to be a little more vulnerable, acknowledging our need and our struggle for answers. We talk about our religious or spiritual journey, and it's helpful to remember that journeys take us places, often places unplanned, and certainly they're not about standing still. This is true with any journey, by the way, spiritual, political, emotional, psychological, or just life in general. Being open to the spirit of exploration requires us first to be open. And being open is an art form in and of itself. It's not always easy to be open. Being open can be enormously risky, especially when we have become closed or guarded because of good reasons, like being wounded or threatened or experiencing something that has made us feel like we just need to protect ourselves. Being open after things like a divorce or a death can feel for a time almost impossible. Being open after being wronged in some way can be very difficult. Being open after being abused emotionally or spiritually or physically can be incredibly difficult, if not sometimes dangerous. There are many good reasons not to be open. And being open can take time and work and the need for healthy support, whether friends or counseling or loving community or other healthy tools. And when it comes to spiritual exploration, there certainly can be things that have wounded us or caused us pain to keep us closed. But it's not always just about being closed. Having uninteresting spiritual journeys can be as simple as not having found something that resonates with us, or having left the faith of our birth and not found anything meaningful at all. What I have found in my unscientific study of spiritual journeys, something that happens in our lives that serves to tug on our sleeve, that makes us want to have some sort of connection, is something that happens to us along the way and asks us to explore questions of meaning as the spirit of exploration takes one small step to the next. And as we take those steps, we can travel in a variety of different directions. We can reconfirm what we already think, and I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way. If we're open and truly exploring, and we examine what we think and feel and understand about the world, and we come to the conclusion that we should continue on the path that we're on, then at least we've been open, And we've explored, and hopefully we've learned and grown along the way. And we can also take new paths and directions. There are plenty of UUs who came to a place of need for exploration, a place where they decided that their path needed to change and explored a UU congregation, like John said, like many of us, if not most of us here today. But I also want to point out that there are UUs who, once they came here thinking it was a place for them to be, decided it wasn't, and it didn't meet their spiritual needs. Perhaps they needed more ritual or religious language or imagery or theology, something they perceived to be more spiritual. And of course, for some, it was the need to fulfill a deeper craving with whatever they believed to be God. My desire for communities of faith, whatever faith they are, is that they don't hold on to their dogma so tightly that they discourage spiritual exploration, which is why I don't support us here having some form of firm cultural dogma about all being secular humanists or UU Buddhists or religious naturalists. One of the reasons I try to be open about various spiritual paths is because I try to live my life influenced and informed by our seven principles. All seven, not just 1, 5, and 7. Our congregations like 1, 5, and 7, but I don't often hear us talk a lot about the others. One, of course, is to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Great. I totally agree with that. I try to practice it as best I can. 7, the other most quoted principle, is the respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Yep, another thing I can wrap my head around. And getting back to 5, a particular favorite and subject of much discussion in Unitarian Universalist congregations, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. We like our democratic process, and sometimes it seems this principle in numbers 1 and 7 feel a little dogma-ish to me, and certainly seem to be the most known. And we like another principle, number 6, because, you know, everybody agrees with this one. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. I always feel like there should be a Superman cape behind me when I say that. Peace, liberty, and justice for all. It's hard not to like that one. Now, however, we come to what one might call the lonely principles. 2 principles not often quoted, and frankly, not that often remembered, even by ministers. Numbers 3 and 4. And here's what number 3 says. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Spiritual growth. Oh my heavens, he said the word spiritual. And it appears right here in our principles. My colleague and someone I admire greatly, Reverend Rob Hardies of All Souls Church Unitarian in Washington, D.C., says this about our third principle. He says, spiritual growth isn't about a vertical ascent to heaven, but about growth in every dimension at once. It's about spirituality in 3D. Growth in spirit doesn't measure one's proximity to God above, but rather the spaciousness of one's own soul, its volume, its capacity, its size. We need souls, he says, that can take in the world in all its complexity and diversity, yet still maintain our integrity. And we need souls that can love and be in relationship with all this complexity instead of flight or fight. We need a spiritual posture of embrace. Yes, I know he used another challenging word, soul. But trying to get past that, we could say we need people that can take in the world with all of its complexity and diversity, yet maintain our integrity. And we need people that can love and be in relationship with all of this complexity instead of flight or fight. We need spiritual posture of embrace. And being in relationship with all this relies on us to be open to spiritual exploration, open. Which brings us to our fourth principle, which is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. About this, Reverend Paige Getty says, as responsible religious seekers, we recognize that we are privileged to be free, to have resources to pursue life beyond mere survival, to continually search for truth and meaning, to exist beyond bonds of dogma and oppression, and to wrestle freely with truth and meaning as they evolve. This privilege calls on us not to be isolated or self-centered, believing that our single perspective trumps all others, but rather to be humble, to be open to the great mysteries of truth and meaning that life offers. And those mysteries may speak to us through our own intuition and experience, but also through tradition, community, conflict, nature, and relationships. And she says, as a faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism makes sacred the right and responsibility to engage in this free and responsible quest as an act of religious devotion. Institutionally, we've left open the questions of what truth and meaning are, acknowledging that mindful people will, in every age, discover new insights. Being open to discovering new insights is part of the calling, history, and theology of this faith tradition. And as I've said before, not quite in the same way, we are here right now in this place calling ourselves a Unitarian Universalist congregation, not only because of who we are today and what our spiritual journeys are now, but because people for centuries have been open to exploration, have questioned religious doctrine, and have left a legacy of freedom and responsibility that we cannot take lightly or disregard. I don't think it's a coincidence that many Unitarian Universalists like Thich Nhat Hanh, for he too calls for freedom and responsibility when searching for truth and meaning. In his book, Interbeing, he lists 14 precepts of engaged Buddhism. I will not read to you all 14. I'd like to share with you today just the first three and encourage you to read the rest. But listen to these and see if they sound a bit familiar. 1, do not be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones. Buddhist systems of thought are guiding means. They are not the absolute truth. 2, do not think the knowledge you presently possess is changeless, absolute truth. Avoid being narrow-minded and bound to present views. Learn and practice non-attachment from views in order to be open to receive other viewpoints. Truth is found in life and not merely in conceptual knowledge. Be ready to learn throughout your entire life and to observe reality in yourself and the world at all times. 3, do not force others, including children, by any means whatsoever, to adopt your views, whether by authority, threat, money, propaganda, or even education. However, through compassionate dialogue, help others renounce fanaticism and narrow-mindedness. I enjoyed reading the book, which I did in seminary, and I really appreciate all 14 of the precepts, but I think these three really speak to us and totally complement UU principles. These and our 7 principles have led me to my own list of questions, Reverend David's list of questions. And I think it will be helpful for us to ask ourselves these questions when on our path of spiritual exploration. So here is my list. 3 questions. Why did we come here? There are some very familiar answers, like I wanted my children to have a religious education, or I needed to find like-minded folks to be in community with. These answers are certainly valid, but I think they are level 1 answers. answers that are easy to find at the surface of our own personal exploration. Sometimes I ask us to dig a little deeper and identify what perhaps lies beneath level one answers. Here's an example of a level two answer. I came here because I have a feeling of disconnection with myself, with my world, and my own soul, and I wanted to be able to find that connection again. Or, I crave religious community, and there were so many things about church that I loved, and yet I couldn't get past the patriarchy. Or even, I was lonely, and I wanted to find people to help me make my life more fulfilling. These aren't answers that come up in casual conversation. They're more risky, and they're more vulnerable. Question number two asks, what is the point of a spiritual journey? What are we trying to achieve? In this community, we don't hold people accountable for having a closer relationship with God or spirit. It is a part of being a non-dogmatic religious community, but not having that expectation sometimes feels like it holds us back from wanting or knowing how to deepen our lives. Because we don't prescribe practice or study, we can feel without spiritual practice or spiritual direction. So I ask, when you undertook this part of your spiritual journey, what were you hoping for? And is it something you're achieving? And if not, what could you do? Or what could congregational life do to help you along your spiritual path? And finally, one with two parts I believe can't be separated. What does it actually mean to practice being a Unitarian Universalist? Do you really believe we are trying to build a beloved community of all souls? And what does that mean to you? And how do you call yourself to do this? This question is kind of like we talk about connection, but what we're actually thinking and connecting to, we don't know. What are we trying to connect to? Are we just connecting to the person in our discussion groups? Are we just connecting with me and others on Sunday? Are we trying to connect to those who don't have like minds? If we really believe that we're trying to build a beloved community of all souls, there's a lot more connecting to do, and it has to be open and creative thinking in order to do it. It will take being open. It will take humility. It may take love of things greater than we currently love, and it will certainly take risk and vulnerability. If we are on a spiritual journey, and I believe that we are all on these types of journeys in life, no matter what we call it, we are truly called to explore the spaciousness of one's own soul, its volume, its capacity, its size. We need souls that can take in the world in all of its complexity and diversity, yet maintain our integrity. And we need souls that can love and be in relationship with all of this complexity if we truly are going to build a beloved community of all souls. Complex and so unbelievably miraculous. On a day when I have thrown around the words spirituality and soul, let me add one more. Miracle. In this quote again from Thich Nhat Hanh, people usually consider walking on water or in thin air a miracle. But I think the real miracle is not to walk either on water or in thin air, but to walk on earth. Every day we are engaged in a miracle which we don't even recognize. A blue sky, white clouds, green leaves, the black, curious eyes of a child, our own two eyes, a miracle. All of this truly is a miracle. And how fortunate we are to be walking through it with one another. Let us continue to explore this miracle together. Let us do this together. May it be so.